It's time for the Cheap and Chad's Power Half Hour.
All right, and welcome back to another episode of Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour. How you doing today, Chief?
Chief is doing good.
Good week.
Just got in from the gym. You know, got a little workout in after pigging out all weekend at Riley's Beach House. Try to shave off the pounds I put on.
Okay, fair enough. All right. So we got three topics of discussion tonight, right? Number one is we're going to have like a quick question sort of debate. I kind of gave you a sneak peek of what that was going to be. And so I'm curious to hear your thoughts. And then we're going to go into some players that we're looking forward to watching this year. And then finally, we're going to get into the real meat of it, which is we've basically gone ahead and ranked the entire league and who we think's best, who we think's worst. And we took different approaches. So I'm really curious to get your feedback there.
Let's do it.
All right, cool. So for our first topic of discussion, I went back and I took a look, and with the exception of 1 year since the start of our auction league, so now we're running over 8 years now, with the exception of 1 year, which is 2012, when Mike won, every single winning title team that's won the championship has had a top eight RB. So I'm positing that if you do not leave the draft with at least one of the following guys, David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, Melvin Gordon, Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara, or Saquon Barkley, if you don't have at least one of those guys, you will not win the championship this year. What do you say to that?
I think that that's a decent take. However, I would add that if you look back at some of those running backs were in some of those years, they weren't necessarily the guys that were going for top dollar on draft day. Trying to think of an example. I think it was, maybe if you go back to when Gelch drafted Arian Foster in 2010, for the non-asterisked title, one of the two that he has. Arian Foster did not go for top dollar in that draft, but he ended up being the number one player in fantasy, or at least the number one running back that year. I'm trying to think of other years. DeMarco Murray, the year Wynkoop won the title, I don't believe was among the top five or six draft running backs in terms of price. So you need to have these type of running backs. You just have to identify who they are. Sometimes they are the guys that go for the most money. Le'Veon Bell last year, the year Joe drafted Jamal Charles in 2013 and won the title, those were instances where people paid top dollar to get a top tier running back, and it worked out.
It's actually Le'Veon Bell the past 2 years, you last year and Gelch the year before. And so I agree with your premise that you need a top eight running back who, in terms of scoring. But my
I would even say you need top five, because if you look at most of those cases, they've been top five running backs that have been leading these teams. I think it's maybe only one where it fell outside of the Mike year in 2012 when he had Michael Turner and Steven Jackson. Most of these guys have been top five.
That's fair. But I guess more where I was going with my point was that in terms of likely predictor, you can expect that a guy that you spend the money on should theoretically be the most likely to be able to score well. Now, we know from previous discussions that 50% of the top running backs that are always drafted end up busting, but in terms of like your likelihood of production, where you're spending that money is worth it. So that's why I'm positive, because I definitely agree, someone's going to find a gem in the draft, right? There's always a gem every year, right? Last year was Alvin Kamara, but in terms of likely production that is likely going to happen, to me, these eight guys that I just listed are the most likely candidates to get there. And so if you're walking out of the draft with at least one of those guys, my position is that your chances of making the championship are diminished right from the get-go. Yeah, you might hit on a gem, but if you don't, you have no shot.
You mean diminished as in
lesser? Like you're
if you don't walk away with one of those guys.
Correct. Yeah. Okay, so if everyone has an equal opportunity at the championship going into the draft and you walk out without one of those guys, the eight people or less, depending on how they're drafted, that have those guys, to me, their overall likelihood of winning a league have now gone up a few percentage points that everyone else that doesn't have them have dropped.
It's a great point, and I would say that, you know, when you're, it makes a point that you should go for studs in the auction draft, and a lot of people, you know, they don't want to necessarily spend top dollar. They want to spread out the wealth, get a balanced team, and I think a stat like that makes the case that, hey, you should actually try and spend a little bit of money here, because you do need studs if you're going to win a title. And my thing always is, in this league, having traded a lot, it's easier to trade away studs if you need to get depth than it is the other way around, than it is to trade depth to get a stud.
100%, that's correct.
I
agree.
That I always err towards maybe getting a stud guy over two depth pieces, because as long as the stud is healthy, he's much more tradable than a pair of number two receivers or a flex worthy running back and a number two receiver or something like that.
Yeah. Now, what I will be curious to see is, because and we kind of touched on this last episode, but there was a lot of guys I didn't mention that you would still consider, you know, a top three tier running back, right? You got guys like Christian McCaffrey. People will put Jerick McKinnon in there, Jordan Howard, Devonta Freeman. There's still a bunch of guys that sort of fall in that in-between category. So it's a question of, you know, can you maybe grab one of those guys at a slight discount and they end up being one of those guys that gets in the top eight? Or more likely, are some people going to try and grab two of those guys and pair them with a top flight receiver?
Well, that's the gamble this year, and it'll be interesting to see what people decide to take that strategy, where they're like, I think I'm going to go for somebody who's going around the $30 to $40 range and hope that they, you know, punch upward and break into that top five, top six tier of running back. Or if people are just going to say, I need to grab me a top five running back, I'm going to go for the big guns here.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure which strategy people are going to take.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, cool. So that was our first topic. So now let's move it right into our three players that we're looking forward to watching this year and why. And I'm thinking we can kind of just go back and forth here. We'll do one at a time, if that works for you.
Yep, works for me.
All right, so why don't you start us off then?
Okay, I will go with my first one, and I'm going to say Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City Chiefs quarterback, because with Alex Smith there, and last year Kareem Hunt kind of becoming Jamal Charles 2.0, you knew what to expect from the Kansas City offense with Andy Reid running it. Mahomes being there, you don't know. It's a bit of a wild card. You don't know where this might go. Who is he going to favor in the passing game? You know, Sammy Watkins is there. Is Mahomes going to be a guy that's going to want to throw deep to Sammy Watkins or underneath to Tyreek Hill? You know, Travis Kelce, where does he fit into all of this? And finally, Hunt is, you know, probably going to get his until Andy Reid decides to give him only six or seven carries a game in the middle of the season, like he did last year. So I'm really interested to see how Mahomes responds. Some of the defenses in the AFC West, Denver's a bit weakened now, but we'll see what they have. They still have a pretty good pass rush. San Diego has a decent defense as well. So he's got to face those two teams four times a year. And I don't know. We'll see if Andy Reid can still develop quarterbacks. I'm just a little anxious to see what happens in Kansas City this year.
So is your reason for wanting to watch him partly to do with the fact that it is Randy Reid? Like if Mahomes was somewhere else and starting, like let's say he was the Dolphins, taking over as the Dolphins starting quarterback, would that not interest you as much? Is it because it's of Andy Reid?
I think it's because of Andy Reid, and it's also because of the players at the skill positions, because Tyreek Hill is a number one receiver and Travis Kelce is a top tier tight end and Kareem Hunt is a number one running back. And here all of a sudden you have a quarterback in his second year thrust into the situation. And is he going to be as good as the last guy was in the same situation? Or is he, you know, even going to be better? Is Kansas City going to be an explosive offense? Who knows? So to me, that's one of the most intriguing situations in the league. But I think it in a good way, because I don't think that I don't think that the Kansas City offense is going to falter, and Andy Reid being there, you know, gives me confidence that it's not going to be a unit that's going to be ineffective moving the ball.
Interesting. Well, you know, my guy that I my first guy that I'm going to bring up is actually I'm following your sort of your take here, where part of the reason why you want to watch him is because of the scheme and the fit in terms of where he is, and for me, that's actually Jerick McKinnon, right? You know, he's thrust into a starting role when Dalvin Cook goes down. Obviously, you know, Latavius Murray and him sort of split a little bit, even though once Murray was healthy. But, you know, for me, I'm trying to balance these two ideas that are on opposite ends. On the one hand, he's never had more than 150 carries in a year. He's never had more than 200 touches. And his running between the tackles, I think his yards per carry are like subpar. It's like 3.4, 3. It's very low. Mm-hmm. From what you normally would want to see. But on the other hand, you've got a Kyle Shanahan office. This guy was handpicked. He's been paid the money. And we saw what Freeman was able to do in that offense in the Falcons when Shanahan was running it. And, you know, typically we generally know that if they pay the person the money, at the very least for this year, I know in terms of the contract, I know it's friendly that he can get out after the first year. But at least for this year, he's going to be the guy. So what I'm curious to see is I want to watch is can he hold up to what I expect to be about 250 overall touches between, you know, carries and targets. But then just, you know, what is the effect that Jimmy Garoppolo has? Obviously, towards the end of last year, he was clicking, you know, when he took over, he was doing really well with his wide receivers. And, you know, Carlos Hyde benefited because of that. So now that McKinnon's taking over, what's he going to end up doing?
I wouldn't say I'm a little down on the 49ers prospects. Maybe it's just my natural pessimism of being a fan. you know, they're being hyped up as a, you know, a potential playoff contender and this and that. And obviously last year, the way Garoppolo ended the season has me very excited for the future of the franchise and what he could potentially do. I will say that I'm not necessarily as excited about their prospects for this season, especially when it comes to the defensive side of the ball. But as it relates to offense, I don't know what to make of McKinnon. I think he's a very good running back, but like you said, I worry about just how much he's going to be touching the ball. Matt Breida is still there, and I still think he's going to get a few touches per game. I don't think McKinnon's going to be a workhorse guy. So I don't think you should expect him to be a you know, a Le'Veon Bell or a David Johnson type by any means. But I do think that one thing that will benefit McKinnon is this. One thing I noticed with Garoppolo last year was Garoppolo is very good at making quick decisions on short passes. Mm-hmm. And his strength is not really throwing the ball downfield. And I think that benefits McKinnon in that if McKinnon is, you know, coming out of the backfield, or if he's lined up in the slot or split out wide after going in motion or something like that, I think McKinnon could be the beneficiary of Garoppolo reading a defense, figuring out where the quickest guy is going to be open. And Garoppolo is really good at making these quick decisions and delivering the ball very quickly, you know, within a few yards of the line of scrimmage. So I do think McKinnon could be in line for a big year in that sense, just splitting out wide and catching the ball. So I would say, you know, he's definitely, if you play in other leagues, I think he could definitely be a great PPR asset. Our league makes that a little trickier since it's only half point PPR, but I still think he'll be a decent value in the sense that I do expect him, just based on the Niners style of play and Garoppolo's style of play, to catch a lot of passes.
Interesting.
So let me go with my second. I'm saying Derrick Henry as my second player. I flash back to that playoff game that the Titans had against the Chiefs, where Henry just ran over them in the second half of that game for about 120 yards and a touchdown. And I'm thinking to myself, is that either a sign of what's to come for Derrick Henry, or is that like the best we're ever going to see of Derrick Henry in the NFL? And that moment was when everything came together for him, and then we may never see it again. I'm not sure what to expect. The Tennessee, you know, Tennessee, this is a team and an offense that can produce a number one running back. We saw it with DeMarco Murray in 2016. You know, Henry can be really productive and kind of take over that kind of role. Deion Lewis there complicates things, obviously. But I still think Henry, if he's going, he could be the guy and could be a potential number one guy if he's running right. You know, I worry about the division a little bit if Houston has their defense back in order after losing all those players last season on defense, and Jacksonville, of course, in that division. So those are four tough matchups right there. But, man, I'm looking at this line from the playoffs, 23 carries, 156 yards on a touchdown in that game against the Chiefs. That's, you know, you don't see that every day. So I'm really curious to see. He's kind of a player that not a lot of analysts are touting as having potential top five upside. I think because Deion Lewis is there, it kind of calmed the Derrick Henry train. But I do think he has quiet potential to be somebody who won't cost a lot on draft day, but who has potential to be a top five, top seven, top eight guy at running back.
Well, you know, I completely agree with that. And the reason for that is real simple, right? What is one of the best predictors of overall production? And that's in terms of touches, right? In terms of carries. Last year, Derrick Henry had, I believe it's around 150 overall carries. Mm-hmm. Marco Murray had over 200. So now you're talking about 200 carries have now vanished and need to go somewhere. Now, there's no way that Derrick Henry can take 200, but he could easily take 100 and give the other 100 to Deion Lewis. Or even if you did 75, 125. That still now puts Derrick Henry at the 225 mark. And generally speaking, when you see a running back get at least 250 touches, that starts putting them into the workhorse category where their overall share, their percentage of the overall share of the work is 65-35%. Once they get above that 65% mark, that's really where we start to see the workhorses emerge, and that's what the number that would get him there. So I think you're completely correct in that. That's a completely plausible number. And now the question just becomes is, in terms of our league, people are probably going to figure that out. And so where is he going
to
end up?
And now they're listening to this podcast and exactly. Hearing our thoughts on him. Yeah.
Because he could have been a guy that went from mid-20s, and now he might go from mid-30s as a result.
We just increased his value by about 50%.
You are welcome, Derrick Henry.
Yep.
All right. Let me go with my second player. Now, this is a guy that we're all very familiar with. We're all big fans of him, and that's number 15 himself, Will Fuller. The reason why I'm really interested in seeing him is last year at one point with Deshaun Watson, he was on a blistering pace. He scored 7 touchdowns in 4 games. He was on pace for like 22 touchdowns in a year. Obviously, that's not sustainable. And a lot of the reason why that didn't happen was because he got hurt. Supposedly this offseason, he's added 15 pounds of muscle. And generally speaking, when it comes to wide receivers, I like to see my wide receivers add weight, and I like to see my running backs cut weight, right? When I see those two things, that gives me a little pop to say, okay, maybe we're going to see some difference. So hopefully that added weight, assuming it's legit, will make him a little bit more durable. And if Deshaun Watson is playing the whole year, Will Fuller, we're going to see a renaissance of Deshaun Kizer circa 2016, 2015-2016, and what he did at Notre Dame offense. I think he could be a real standout, and given the drawing coverage that Hopkins always has, Fuller is almost always going to pull one-on-one coverage. And he doesn't need to catch a lot of balls. He can catch 60 balls, top 1,000 yards, and still have 8 or 9 touchdowns and be a real threat.
He's a new DeSean Jackson, in a sense.
Yeah. You can,
you know, that's who he reminds me of, and that's kind of, I think, the role that he'll end up playing is deep threat DeSean Jackson. You know, I think you're right. We'll see how the added weight affects his speed. That's always what you worry about when you hear adding weight, especially to a receiver, considering speed is his biggest asset. But yeah, I mean, this, if Watson comes back and is, and it's possible, you know, healthy from day one, the Texans offense could be one of the most potent in the league. And if you don't have a share of it somehow, you might be kicking yourself. Obviously, like you said, the touchdown rate was unsustainable, but if he's in an explosive offense and Hop, like you said, Hopkins is drawing all the attention on one side of the field, it's going to open up a lot for Fuller on the other side. And if everybody's healthy and Watson comes back and is 100%, then yeah, the sky's the limit, I think, for that Houston passing game.
Yep, I agree. All right, who's your last guy?
My last guy is not so much guy, but guys, plural, and it's right here in my new hometown of Minnesota. I am intrigued by the Minnesota passing game, Thielen and Diggs, with Kirk Cousins now running the show at quarterback. Because Cousins has always spread the ball around, and if anything, he's, you know, favored or been able to produce number one tight ends in terms of Jordan Reed when Jordan Reed has been healthy. So I'm wondering if we're going to see repeat performances from Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, or, you know, does Cousins favor Diggs over Thielen potentially in the passing game? And do we see Diggs take that top 10, you know, move into the top 10, and Thielen is more of the top 20 receiver when it comes to those two? Or does Cousins just start spreading the ball around? Does Kyle Rudolph play a bigger role in this offense outside of the red zone? I don't know. I'm not sure what it's going to look like. Is Dalvin Cook going to be the guy who's the focal point of the offense? I think as long as Mike Zimmer is the head coach, I tend to think that Minnesota, and having watched them closely last season, I tend to think that Minnesota is going to adopt the approach of, let's play defense, let's run the ball and control the clock, and having a good passing game like this is great when we need it, but for the most part, we're going to be a ball control team that moves the ball down the field measured and not in chunks. And so I'm curious to see, even though Kirk Cousins is there, if this Minnesota passing game truly takes off the way some people think it might this year.
I think that's really interesting. You cheated a little bit by picking more than one person, but I'll let it slide.
I did.
You know, I would still lean towards Thielen, if only because Diggs, I've yet to see him have a full healthy season, right? Or he maybe had one, but he always ends up getting hurt at some point.
He does. And it's usually his groin.
That's why I just lean towards Thielen. I think he's more of a reliable workhorse. I think he's going to catch more passes. So especially in the PPR league, I think that's going to be more important. And you know, when it comes to Rudolph, I definitely have high. I have a high expectation for him. But the thing you got to remember is that over the past few years, Kyle Rudolph has actually had a target share of over 100 targets per year, which is really high for a tight end, but it's also part of the reason why he's been so successful. So while it's great that Kirk Cousins likes to target his tight end, I don't know how much more he can target Rudolph compared to what he has before. Now, maybe you can make the argument that he's more efficient with his passes, so therefore Rudolph, it goes up a couple ticks in terms of his overall catch percentage, but he shouldn't see a larger chunk of the overall passing game because he already commanded such a large chunk before.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I did not realize he had that big of a target share, to be honest.
Yeah,
with you.
I think prior to last year, when I was looking at his numbers, this is before the 2017 season, the year before, so this 2016, he had like 128 targets. And so, yeah, that was really impressive to me that he caught so much. Now, obviously, that's, you know, you're going back to what, Case Keenum and a combination of Case Keenum and I don't even know who was the quarterback there. It was Keenum, and it wasn't Bradford, right? But it was.
Which year was this?
2016.
2016. Mostly Bradford, I think.
Was it Bradford? Okay.
Yeah.
So, so there you go. So, but you know, the point is that, you know, you can only have so many passes. Now, I think Cousins is going to throw more overall. He's going to have more overall attempts than Keenum does. So, you know, maybe there is a little bit of room for growth there, but. If anything, I just see a target share growing for Diggs and for Thielen, not so much for Rudolph. But we don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Who's your last guy?
So my last guy, I changed on you. So you thought it was going to be Baker Mayfield.
But I did.
Actually, I you know I thought that'd be too much of an easy narrative to go with. You know, when we, when he come in, what kind of impact will he have? Will he finally be the guy that the Browns need? But I actually changed my mind to another rookie QB situated just south of where I am in Baltimore, in Lamar Jackson. And yeah, and the reason why is this. When you look at those two guys comparatively, Lamar Jackson had more rushing yards last year than the number two overall pick in the draft, Saquon Barkley. Plus, he threw for like 3,500 yards. So, to me, that's just a guy that is going to have to get on the field at some point, because let's face it, Joe Flacco is done. He's the presumed starter for this year because he's getting paid a ton of money. But I think by mid-year, if he's not getting it done, you're going to see Lamar Jackson on the field. And I even think you're going to see him before that, either in gadget plays or in some limited packages, because Lamar Jackson is just too explosive to not get on the field. Plus, when you combine that with the fact that the coaching staff around him was responsible for working with Michael Vick when he was at his most explosive, and also with Colin Kaepernick in his big year in San Francisco, you have coaches around him that know how to use a mobile quarterback and hopefully will keep him upright and not not get knocked to the ground and knocked out like, you know, we saw RG3 and previous young mobile quarterbacks. So for me, I think it's just a matter of time. The writing's on the wall, and if you can get Lamar Jackson at a low price, I think you're talking about a combination, a guy that, you know, was it 4 or 5 years ago when I think it was Ryan or Jake that bought both Andrew Luck and RG3 for $1 each and ended up having, you know, two starting quarterbacks. I think you're going to have the same possibility with Lamar Jackson, same as you did last year with Carson Wentz, getting a guy for a really low price and ended up blowing the doors off. I don't think he'll be there all year, so I think he'll end up being a waiver wire ad. So now it's going to be just a question of when does he go off and how much money does somebody spend on him and waiver wire the next week.
And interesting. Yeah, that's definitely one that is not going to be one that we're going to be talking about on draft day. It's going to be, like you said, a mid-season thing, definitely. I think Joe Flacco's horrible. Always have. He had one great moment of brilliance in the 2012 playoffs. My stupid 49ers couldn't shut him down in the Super Bowl that year. So it'll forever irk me. But other than that, he's been mostly terrible. And I'm excited to see something different in Baltimore this year. Anyway, we're running a little long here, so we got to get to the meat of the show here.
Yeah, it's okay. We're helping our friend Mike out, who's on a road trip right now cross country. So a little more talking is good for him. So
yes.
How do you want to do this? Do you want to go through each of our lists in full? Do you want to break it up? What do you think the best way to handle this?
Let's go through each of our lists in full, since we'll just deal with them as one entity at a time.
Fair enough. So I'll go first. And
my
approach was different than yours. The approach
talk about your criteria. Yeah.
So my approach was real simple. I was doing a straight up rankings 1 to 12, right? Best to worst. And the main criteria I was looking at, number one, was I looked at, in terms of length of time, for me, it was auction league only. I know we existed as a league before that with some snake drafts for a few years. I'm sure that played into your rankings. But for me, the auction league was really the in my eyes, the start of our league. So that's the criteria I looked at. I'm also I have horrible memory, so there are some guys that I just don't know as well, so I probably have downplayed their abilities. And for the brothers, I do apologize for that, but you guys would be one of the first two named. But then the third thing I looked at was with some of the stats that Mancuso provided to us recently, I was actually really impressed at such a narrow gap between, you know, the person with the most wins and the person, people with the least wins. I mean, you're only talking about a spread of 16 games. You're talking at most a spread of 2 games a year in differences. So, number one, I was impressed in terms of our overall league because of that. But number two, I factored that into how I ranked. But I also had to consider the fact that there are some people that have won a championship and some people that haven't. But I weighted that way that they won and how many they won have won differently. And so that was kind of the criteria I used. So starting off for me, number 12 I have in the position is Ryan. And number 11 is Jake. And again, this is probably just short-sightedness. But to me, those guys are always they're consistently mediocre. I know that they occasionally make playoffs, but I've never seen them really make a big splash. I don't really ever remember them having a really impressive year, and it's possible that I'm wrong, but it just I going based completely off my memory, those to me, you know, those are the weakest in the group.
I think can I interject?
Yes, please do.
I think you're off base when it comes to Jake there. Jake has had the better run over the last 8 years than Ryan has.
Right, that's why I
for
put him
sure.
Ahead.
Jake has made the playoffs 4 times, and I think he's made the finals once at least.
Okay.
And there might be 2 finals appearances in there. So I do think Jake at least deserves a little more love. And I would put Ryan, as you'll see when I do my rankings, I put Ryan ahead of some other people in our group as well. I think you're short shrifting those guys a little bit.
Okay, that's fair. So coming in at 10, and this might be a bit of a hot take, but number 10 for me is none other than Wynkoop. I know he's got a title, but that, to me, if I'm being just realistic, that is the sole reason why I didn't put him at the 11 or 12 spot. And I put him barely above Jake and Ryan, was because he had the title. I do respect it, but, you know, every once in a while, a blind squirrel finds a nut, and if you hit the right players, you're going to have a great year. And as we talked about, he basically didn't trade much, so basically he just ended up drafting really well and had some good pickups, but that was about it that got him there. So it was one of those years where he suffered very little injury. The guys he picked from the draft and on hit, and that's he basically rode that. And while I do respect that, you know, you don't usually know that stuff when you're coming out of the draft. You have a good feeling, but we've always talked about the fact that you don't win your title on draft day, right? It's about the other moves you make and the trades you make. And for Coop, a little bit of it was he won it on draft day. And so I respect the fact that he won. Obviously, I don't have a title. But for me, just in terms of his mediocrity, you know, he had one shining moment. That's great. But that's not enough to really rise the ranks for me.
Take that, doctor.
Yeah, doctor. All right. Next up I got is at 9, I have none other than Gates Nation. You know, Gates throws you a curveball every year. We all talked about it. If you're in the draft and he starts bidding on players, you basically are shit out of luck because he's probably going to get them because they're on his list. You know, I would love to see his strategy pay off, but he hasn't. But he's also been very consistent in his hot fire that he throws out on the boards in terms of his rivalries. And his naming conventions and his gifts and all that stuff is always very good. And he's a very well, he's never been super great. He's never been super bad. He's always been very consistent in terms of his overall play and his streak. So for that, I had to put him just a slight notch above Coop. And also, you know, I just, you know, with Coop's name last year, I had to give the slight edge to Gates.
All right. I don't really have much of an issue with that.
All right, next up I have is TJC. And I think this is another place where you and I differ in that I put the Three Musketeers together, right? Tim, Joe, and Claire. I think
yes.
You broke them out, right?
I did. I broke them out, and I also broke out you and Kat.
Right.
Since both have bodies of work that include them as a duo and as separate owners, so I broke both of them. I broke both of you guys out into separate.
Yeah,
rankings.
See, and this comes back to my ability of like I don't have a great memory. So for me, recency bias is definitely playing in. Obviously, did with Jake and Ryan, but for TJC, you know they've been together for a while, and so I'm going recency bias here. And again, similar to Gates, where I think they've always been just very steady. Never had a super great year. Never a super bad year. But the fact is that they always hit on guys, and they've always been good at making a trade. I remember last year there was a point where they wanted to trade Eddie Lacy and Deion Lewis with me, and I said, sure. And then 2 weeks later, Deion Lewis breaks out, and all of a sudden he's gangbuster. So for me, that's always – I felt like they've always made good decisions, and especially as a unit where you're always going to have differing opinions, I thought that as a co-owners they've always done really, really well. And so that's why I put them at the 8th spot.
All right. On to number 7.
7 I have is my paramour, Kat. You know, it's tough because half of this time we've basically been together. So, you know, I'm not really spoiling anything here, but, you know, I have her at 7. I have me at 6. She is a half a game better than me in the overall records, but I've had more playoff appearances, I believe, and I feel like I've had more wins over my rival, which I also take into account. And so because of that, I had to kind of put it sort of right in the middle at that 50% mark. We've achieved together. We've achieved without each other. And so it's just a matter, you know, if one of us had won the title, then obviously that person would be at front. But obviously, just me being chauvinistic, I'm going to put myself above her just a little bit because I think I'm a better overall player. At least I spend more time paying attention to fantasy than she does.
All right. And I have you guys ranked very close to each other as well.
Fair enough. So now we get the real meat of it.
Tough to decide, yes.
Yeah. So number five I have coming in is yourself, Big Chief.
Boo! I'm kidding.
Hey, look, you're top 40%, right?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that is swayed by the fact that you just won a title. You know, if that wasn't the case, then you probably would have been maybe equal to me or slightly below me or Kat. But the fact is you won a title, so I had to show the respect to you. And I had to, you know, you've always been very good in terms of your draft strategy and who you go after. And sometimes it hasn't worked for you, but other times it has, like last year. And, you know, I tip my cap to the current reigning champion.
All right. On to four.
Number four. Now, these top four, I think for the most part, most people in the league, including yourself, are going to agree that these are the top four guys. The challenge is now is how do you – what's the pecking order? So, obviously, one of my criteria is winning the championship, right? And so because of that, I had to put Weens, Johnny, at the four spot. He's been one of the most consistent players in our league. He gets – I was just talking with Kat about this. She pays him out every single year, right? Mm-hmm. We're a money league. He always gets paid back something. So that counts for something, but he's never closed a deal. Sometimes it's been really bad luck, right? Was that one year where he had like one of the highest scores overall, but he had like one of the worst schedules. It just, you know, that part plays into it. But the fact is that I even put him above you who won a title, I think just shows level of respect that, you know, we agree that he is one of the top guys. And if he had won a championship or two, he might even be the top guy. But the fact is I still have to take into account people who have won titles. And so because of that, he comes in at the fourth spot.
All right.
So I'm going to go through because I want to make sure I'm keeping us on time. But my 3-2-1 is number three is Joseph, Mr. Mancuso. Two comes in at Gelch, and number one is Mike. And my reasonings are basically this. So you have Mike with two titles. You have Gelch with 2.5 titles, however you want to say that. Two titles with a asterisk title, three titles, and Mancuso with a title himself. So number one, obviously I respect all these guys in terms of their knowledge. There was no way in hell I was putting Gelch first. I don't care that he's got three titles. It's just not going
to
happen.
I was surprised you put Gelch above Joe, to be honest. I thought Gelch would have taken a back seat to Joe at number three.
You know what? If he had had only two titles, then I might make that argument.
He also won one of his titles in 2010 after he encouraged everybody to switch over to the auction format, a format that only he had done previously.
You are 100% correct.
You know, he really did boondoggle the league, swindle us all for a title in 2010. Then he swindled a title in 2011, and he has, you know, the 2016 one, obviously.
That very good point. Yeah. And I actually did bring it up with Kat. I was like, you know, that was our first year in auction league. So to a degree, there's a mulligan factor. But at the end of the day, he's got his name on the trophy. So I have to respect it a little bit.
Yes.
The fact is that he's not been able to really defeat me in terms of our rivalry. I think just shows that, yeah, he's won some titles, but I'm still the better overall fantasy player. At least in terms of our rivalry. Mancuso, you know, like Weens, solid player every single year, always has good strategy, but he won a title, so that's why he got the slight nod. And then with Mike, you know, he won two different years with two very different teams, and the biggest thing for him that ran in his favor was that miraculous 12-1 run. No one's come close to that kind of perfection, and I just that for me was the respect. And that was backed up by the stats that Mancuso gave us with Mike at the top in terms of overall wins. I think it was at 60. So I just, you know, all those things combined gave Mike the top slot for
me. All right. So I did the with the traditional 1-4 ranking that has taken hold of this group since last year's Gates Bachelor Party. And I the top four that you have are my top four. I did not rank myself. In this exercise, I will leave that to others. I did not put myself on this ranking. One is C-Mal. And so you have to be as bad as C-Mal to be a one. nobody else is a one. Everybody is at least a two, because nobody is as bad as Seamal, who basically was a co-conspirator for the 1 year.
Gelch
he was
title.
handed Gelch a title in 2011. So you have to be as bad as Seamal to be a one. You are not a one. Let me talk a little bit about my criteria as well. I did go back to at least 2008 with this. I did take into account 08 and 09. So Mike, under my criteria, Mike has three titles. Tim gets a boost because Tim made it to the finals in 09 against me. So I and that affected his ranking a little bit. So I did take that into effect or into account. I did take Mancuso's list of Auction League playoff appearances. It mattered to me how many playoff appearances you made. To me, that's an indicator of consistency. I looked at points per week and overall wins, but mostly I looked at playoff appearances. How many times did you get in? And so based on that, even though Wynkoop, and I did take into, you know, how many titles you have as well. Even though Wynkoop has the title, he only has two playoff appearances in the Auction League. And so I had to put him at a two because of that. And he is tied with Gates, who has three playoff appearances. And Gates, he was also helped by the fact that Gates' magic was very strong in 2009 as well. But I just couldn't put him to a level of a three. If you go back and look at that 2009 season, that was the epitome of fantasy defense by Gates. I mean, he was winning matchups that year that he had no business winning because his opponents just were shitting the bed every single week. So, but he did have the second best record in the regular season that year. But I could not put him up to a three. And my third person who has a two, and this was very tough. It's right on the border, Cat. So, this could go up if you make the playoffs this year. It is very loose. Cat is also a two. Don't hate me, Cat.
Don't worry, baby.
Me.
Don't worry, baby. I got you.
Don't hate me. Don't hate me, Cat. I just three playoff appearances overall. It's the same as Gates. I had to draw a line somewhere, and it's so close, Cat. It is so close. You're almost a three. Anyway, on to the threes. We've got a big group of threes here. Mostly everybody to me is a three, where it's like everybody has had good years in this group. Everybody has had bad years. Nobody has really stood out. This is also a group that nobody has won a title in. So that's, that gotcha. Might be a bit of a demarcation point.
That plays into it, I see.
Yeah. And so the threes are Ryan, Tim, Chaz, Joe, O'Brien, Tim, and Jake. I would say that with a strong appearance, with a strong season this year, and if Tim doesn't make the playoffs, Kat and Tim could easily switch the 2-3 positions there. Hmm. So the race is on for this season. Ryan and Jake, I feel like, have been very solid. Ryan only has three playoff appearances, but to be honest, Ryan deserved a lot better the last 2 years, and I took that into account in my ranking of him. His three playoff appearances could easily be five and probably should be five. So I really think he got shafted the last few years. Jake has always been a constant threat. He's had a couple down years, but overall solid, four playoff appearances. I believe he has the one finals appearance, if not two. Joe Mancuso can correct me on that. Joe and Tim. Tim benefits from making the finals in 09. I remember that. And so that's honestly what separated him from being a two and being a three, is that he does, on his own, have a finals appearance in our league. And, with Tim and Joe, they've been, fairly solid. Three playoff appearances plus the success in 09. tips Tim up into a three, and we'll see how he does as a solo owner this season. Joe, always solid as well. I feel like he was successful in 09 and 08 as well. I don't recall 100% on that, but I feel like he's always going to draft a decent team. They have the finals appearance, I think, in the Wine Coupe year as well. Chaz, you're always, you've been fairly solid, four playoff appearances. Haven't quite gotten over the hump yet, but I feel like it's coming, especially with all the research you do. And just general fire for the league as well. I appreciate that. that also factors into the ranking. I think the lack of a title is preventing you from being a four. And the fours are Johnny, Joe, Gelch, and Mike. And I don't think I have to elaborate too much on that. Johnny was the only one I considered, since he's that group that doesn't, the only one of that group that doesn't have a title, but he has just been so consistent year in and year out, especially that run he had three straight years of I think winning the regular season 2014 through 2016.
Yep. That sounds right.
Yeah, and Mike, like I said, Mike has three titles under my criteria. Besting Gelch in my eyes, and the 2.5 that Gelch has, the untainted, three untainted titles. And Joe, of course, consistently solid, one title, could have been two this year, but sorry, buddy.
All right. So, I think that's, I like those rankings. I like the angle you took, and obviously we'll come back this next year and make this one of our yearly staples of rankings and see how they change from year to year.
Nobody's mad at us. Sorry, Cap.
Yeah, I know, right? I got Jake and Ryan are going to send me, Twitter bombs in the mail now. All right, so that'll wrap it up for this, what I'll call an extended edition of the Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you like us, please subscribe. Leave a review. If we get some funny reviews, maybe we'll go ahead and read them on air. And who knows, maybe one day we'll get a sponsor.
Don't be afraid to submit questions.
That's right. Yeah, if you listen to the end roll, remember, if you guys download the Anchor podcast, A-N-C-H-O-R, and make a profile, you can search for us in the Listen tab. You can find our podcast, and you can actually submit live questions. They won't be live, but you can submit voicemail questions, which we can then play and then answer them on the show. So feel free to do that, and we'll make sure we get to those, okay? All right. Anything else, Chief?
I'm good to go. I'm going to go pop in a episode. We'll pop in like it's a DVD. I'm going to go try an episode of The Sopranos here and pass out on my recliner.
Sounds great. All right, everybody. Have a great night.